Jaya Krishna Krishnaya Bhutale.
Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste. Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pichana Nivasesa Samarani Paskatya Desitana Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakama Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sambhujatam Sadhana Adamatam Nipatam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Karijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
April 18, 2012, Bhaktivinoda Manor in London. And this is part 3 of Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, reading through verses 13 to 20. So, what have we talked about so far? A general overview of the bhakti path. What's the qualification? To be a jiva. How do you get delivered? Krishna. What are the three stages on the bhakti path as given in chapter 12? The angas of bhakti. Then? Abhyasa yoga. Then? Raganuga bhakti. How do you get from... what is Raganuga bhakti? Yes, but how is it defined here?
It's constantly fixed mind.
Constantly fixed mind and intelligence on Krishna. What are the qualifications? That Krishna, Radha Krishna are dancing on your tongue when you chant, that you perceive that Krishna is directly eating the food that you offer, and you don't live on the material plane. If you can't do that, then what do you do to prepare yourself for Raganuga Bhakti? No, different path. What do you, if you're not qualified for Raganuga Bhakti, what do you do to become qualified for Raganuga? Abhyas yoga. Abhyas literally means?
Practice
or? Repetition. What are you repeating? Yes, bringing the mind back to Krishna. You're repeatedly bringing the mind back to Krishna. How does Abhyasa Yoga prepare you for Raganuga Bhakti? What does Abhyasa Yoga give you that allows you to enter into Raganuga Bhakti?
Desire.
Gives you desire. Suppose you're not qualified for Abhyasa Yoga. Suppose you can't control your mind. Then what do you do? The external angas of bhakti. Okay? And what does that mean?
Doing external things.
The external Shravan Kirtan Vishnu. Okay, we're also doing that in Abhyasa Yoga. It's not that you stop doing the externals. And what qualification does doing the Angas of Bhakti give you that allows you to enter into Abhyasa Yoga? Peace. Because you can't control the mind unless you're peaceful. And how do you become peaceful? How does doing the Angas of Bhakti give you peace? What's the main thing you have to cultivate in the angas of bhakti that gives you the peace that allows you to enter into Abhyasa Yoga? No, that's for the yoga life. Although there's faith in bhakti also, obviously.
Fixed inside.
Was the certain mentality?
The
Krishna is the boss. Okay, Krishna is the boss. Bhaktira Megitapa Samsara Lokmahesham Surudam Sarabhutanam Gyatva Mam Shanti Michiti. So that gives you shanti, that gives you peace. Without peace, you can't practice controlling your mind, so that's possible. So thinking that Krishna is the boss, everything I'm doing for him. He's my company president. What are we selling? Prema. And whatever, so I don't worry much, Prabhupada says, about my maintenance. Because Krishna's maintaining me. Okay, that's the path of bhakti. Little side note, where does Varnashram fit into that? The What's the relationship of our ashram to the path of bhakti? It's in the indirect, part of the indirect path. But what is, can you use Varnashram in bhakti? You can. It's optional.
Regulating the propensities.
It helps to regulate your propensities. So in the external, in doing the angas of bhakti externally, and in doing the angas of bhakti both externally and internally, as a Vyasa Yoga, Varnashram can be accepted as optional. In which case it becomes gona dharma. It becomes a subsidiary function, and if done in the proper consciousness, it also acts like bhakti, like the iron rod in the fire. What about at Bhaganuga Bhakti? Would you be doing anything in Varnashram?
Yes, you can still do it.
You could. Why?
Just show an example.
Just to set an example. Okay? Now, there's also an indirect path. Now, this indirect path, does that lead to the angas of bhakti, abhyas yoga, or raganuga bhakti? Where can it lead to? Abhyas yoga. Can you go directly from the indirect path to raganuga bhakti? No. Okay, what's the indirect path? Starts with? Escapes. Actually, Varnashram isn't even part of the indirect path. Varnashram gives you the qualifications to begin the indirect path. So Varnashram, you're not on the indirect path yet. That's just qualifying you. And it qualifies you by giving you, what does it give you?
Piety.
Okay, then where can you start the indirect path? Two places you can start it. Karma Yoga or Gyan Yoga. You start either Karma Yoga or Gyan Yoga. What is Karma Yoga? It's Varnashram Dharma, but done
for Krishna.
For Krishna would be very nice. Then if it's done really for Krishna, then it's Gona Dharma, a subsidiary function of bhakti. On the indirect path, Varnashram is done for? For self-realization. For realizing either the self, Brahman, or both. So, of course, Brahman is also Krishna. So you could say it's being done for Krishna, but not really. Okay, and what is Gyan Yoga? What are you doing in Gyan Yoga? So in Karma Yoga, you're acting in Varnashram like everybody else, but your motive is different. And in Gyan Yoga, what are you doing? You're studying. Are you necessarily doing all the duties of Varnashram? No, probably not. And what kind of people are going to be doing Gyan Yoga? Mostly renunciates or very renounced householders. And you're not so active in the world, you're studying Shastra. Particularly you're studying the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra. Okay, by the way, if you start at Karma Yoga and go to Gyan Yoga, what does Karma Yoga give you that allows you to get to Gyan Yoga?
Peace
by giving up the fruits, by giving up a desire to enjoy the fruits, karma palatyaga, you get shanti, you get peace. You can't sit and study Shastra all day if you're not peaceful. It just won't be possible. You want to jump up and do things. Okay, what's the last step on the yoga ladder?
Dhyan
Yoga. What are you doing in Dhyan Yoga? You're entering into samadhi, you're meditating on the Paramatma. Now you can go from Gyan Yoga to Dhyan Yoga, or you could go from Karma Yoga directly to Dhyan Yoga. And again, the qualification is peace. Now how do you get from Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, or Dhyan Yoga to the Abhyasa Yoga of Bhakti? You have to get the mercy of a devotee, which gives you instructions and faith. You have to get some faith. Everybody remember that now from the last 2 days? Alright. So the last part of the chapter is both inspiring and humbling. And it's about the qualities of those who have attained peace. So peace is again the bridge from where to where?
From
Karma Yoga to Gyan or Dhyan. It's also the bridge from Gyan Yoga to Dhyan, and it's the bridge from the Angas of Bhakti to Abhyas Yoga. Now here Krishna is going to be really focusing on the peace attained by the Bhakti Yogi, not as much the peace attained by the Karma Yogi or the Gyan Yogi. So these are going to be the qualities of the Bhakta who has attained peace. So these are peace either by performing the external limbs of Bhakti with what consciousness? With what consciousness? How do you attain peace in Bhakti?
Fix the mind.
You can't fix the mind yet at that point. And Krishna is the boss. He's the proprietor. Everything I'm doing, I'm working for him. Or the peace attained through the indirect path. So this enables you, this peace produces certain qualities. You know, we just talk about peace. Peace. But here Krishna's becoming very specific. He's analyzing. You know, analyzing, you take something and you break it up into its smaller parts. Like you're going to talk about what's humility, what's forgiveness. Those are just sort of big, vague words, right? Or what's love? Like Rupa Goswami breaks up love into all these different parts and subparts, and how do they relate to each other. So here Krishna is going to take the big quality of peace. He's already said, by giving up the fruits of your activities, you attain peace. Now he's going to explain, what does that look like? What does that feel like? What would you be doing? What exactly? What would you be thinking? What exactly would you be feeling? What exactly would you be doing? And Prabhupada says that these qualifications enable a person to fix their mind. So they give you these qualifications of peace. They enable you to perform Abhyas Yoga. They enable you to keep pulling your mind back to Krishna and eventually come to Raghunuga Bhakti, where you can fix your mind on Krishna. Okay, so this is the bridge again to Abhyas Yoga, Shanti. Okay, now, what does peace have to do with all these wonderful qualities? Why are these wonderful qualities the result of peace? So we've talked about this many times. Now, in the Bhagavatam, it says the non-devotees have no good qualities. And sometimes we hear that and we say, well, that doesn't justify with my experience. I experience that people who are atheists have good qualities. And sometimes I experience, perish the thought, that some people in Bhakti Yoga don't always have good qualities. Sometimes it's very amazing. You know, we think if I join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness that every single member is going to be a saint. Of course, I don't consider whether or not I'm a saint. I assume that I'm a saint, and then I am very surprised that everybody else isn't. Of course, they're wondering why I'm not. But anyway, they're having the same questions about me. And we see that people outside, even atheists, they can have moral principles, they can follow ethics, they can have so many good qualities. So what exactly does this mean? Of course, there's a number of places where Prabhupada says that non-devotees can have good qualities. And in fact, Krishna has a whole part of the universe for atheists who have good qualities. It's called the subterranean heavenly planets. So what are they for? They're for atheists who are following Varnashram Dharma and have good qualities. Who goes there? See, Krishna's very kind. He's not like the modern Christian idea of God that if you don't surrender to him in love, then you have to suffer. Even if Rupa Goswami describes this as dependable, Krishna's quality of dependable, that the demons know that if they follow the rules, Krishna's not going to punish them. In fact, he's going to reward them. Which is why sometimes the demons even get in charge of things, like Hiranyakashipu, and then Krishna has to find some trick to get him out. Anyway, so why do the demons not have any good qualities ultimately, or any atheist, or anybody who's below the point of peace? Because peace is the opposite of fear. And if we have any fear, then as soon as we feel that fear, we jettison our good qualities. Jettisoning your good qualities when you feel fear is called cowardice. So what does it mean to be a coward? It means I'm in a situation where I become so overwhelmed by fear that I do something selfish or immoral. Isn't that what it means to be a coward? There's a situation that calls for me to do something that's risky to myself for a greater good. And out of fear, I choose the lower path. Out of fear for myself and my own protection, I don't help others or I don't exhibit moral principles. Now, it's interesting that even demons denigrate cowardice. Even the demons don't like cowardice. But the essential principle of conditioned life is to be a coward. Because conditioned life, you're overwhelmed by fear. Now, to whatever extent, these things are not black and white. It's not that either you're a total demon or you're a pure devotee. It's just not like that. So to whatever extent one is feeling peace, to that extent, one will act properly, even if there's danger to myself. But if I don't have complete faith in Krishna, if I don't have complete trust in Krishna, then I don't have complete faith and complete peace. And whatever point my peace runs out, at that point I'll act like a coward. If we think of it just in terms of ordinary honesty, is anybody here prepared to say, I'm a totally honest person? Anybody ready for you to say, I'm 100% honest person? Embarrassing, isn't it? So at what point do we become dishonest? I'm sure we're all basically honest people. Hopefully. At what point do we become dishonest? When we become a coward. When we're thinking, if I'm honest in this situation, I may suffer. Therefore, if one has full peace, one has full good qualities. If one has full peace, one has full good qualities. Otherwise, we don't really have good qualities. We're really self-serving. And if being good and being proper and being moral will serve ourselves, we do it. And if it doesn't, we won't. And as one progresses in Krishna consciousness, that point at which out of fear we give up our good qualities gets higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And a person will start acting properly, even in more and more and more scary situations. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur introduces this section by saying, what's the description of the devotee who's attained such peace? And now there's 8 verses to describe that devotee. Now, Prabhupada often talks about how these good qualities come automatically by bhakti. Now, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that the devotee doesn't make any effort at all to develop these qualities? If we compare it to being a vegetarian, Prabhupada also often says that being a vegetarian is automatic when you're a devotee. You don't have to join a vegetarian society to become a vegetarian. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with devotees joining a vegetarian society. But the point is, you don't have to become a vegetarian by joining a vegetarian society. It's a natural part of bhakti. But still you have to make some effort to be a vegetarian, even in bhakti. You have to read labels. You guys call it the hypermarket. So in America, if you say you're going to the hypermarket, that means that you're going to the supermarket. We have supermarkets instead of hypermarkets. But anyway, you can't just go to the hypermarket and close your eyes and chant Hare Krishna and just randomly pull things off the shelf into your cart because I'm a devotee, therefore whatever I eat will automatically be vegetarian. No, it's not like that. We make an effort to be a vegetarian, but it's part of our bhakti. It's not separate from our bhakti. So in a similar way, we make an effort. One person was asking the other day about that until one is at a very high platform, doing these things feels somewhat artificial and mechanical. So yes, you make a mechanical effort. You make a deliberate effort. That's what practice bhakti is about. You're practicing to have these good qualities. So what I've done is, instead of going verse by verse through the rest of the chapter, I've divided up the category, the qualities as far as possible into categories. So the first category I found, and I'm sure that somebody could do a much better job than I did of dividing this into categories. So if you don't agree with how I've categorized it, you can please make a suggestion at the end of the class, and then the next time I present it, hopefully we'll do a better job. So this first category is being determined and undistracted. Determined and undistracted. That Krishna is the supreme goal of life, that I don't give up serving Krishna, even, you know, if I have some problem, if some devotee yells at me, or I have a stomach ache, or I don't have any money, or whatever. That I'm controlling myself. I don't have to be controlled just by some rule in the temple, or by some sort of threat or punishment. Very expert, lovely quality, expert. Prabhupada says the devotee should know something of everything and everything of something. So I really love it when Srila Prabhupada talks about this quality in Bombay in 76 in relationship to education and gurukula. So some devotees have the rather interesting idea that we should educate our children to be materially fools. I remember even there was the father of one of my students who said, don't give my child an education so he can go to university if he wants to. Don't give him any choice other than to live in the ashram. So Prabhupada says in the second canto that Gurukula is for teaching the values of life plus specific training for a livelihood. And it's very interesting that Srila Prabhupada was speaking about this principle of being expert both in relationship to the training of children and in relationship to the adults who are in the Brahmachari ashram in Bombay. Which tells me that in our temples we should be training our Brahmacharis and Brahmacharinis to become expert, to know something of everything and everything of something. And then, of course, to be pure. One cannot fix one's mind, Prabhupada says in the first canto, cannot hear the Bhagavatam with rapt attention unless one's pure in body. One cannot be pure in body unless he's free in eating, sleeping, fearing, and defending. One cannot be pure in that unless one is pure in mind. Then not looking for material results. Not being attached to the result. This is the same principle as karma palatyaga. I'm not working for my own happiness, and my happiness is not dependent on the result. Sometimes, even in Krishna consciousness, we're thinking, well, Krishna's grace, Krishna's happiness is dependent on the number of books that I sold, or whether or not I collect the money to fix the pujari room, or some kind of external result. That's still a fruit of mentality. One should understand, I'm not the doer. I can't control the results. I just do my duty, and I'm offering my duty now, and now, and now, and now to Krishna. The result I'm looking for is that Krishna is pleased with me now, and Krishna is pleased with me now, and Krishna is pleased with me now. Without any cares. I have a great boss. I don't have to worry that my boss will not pay my salary. One time my husband had a job, and he only worked at it for a couple weeks, because at the end of that time, his boss didn't pay him. You know, so one may worry if one has a job. Maybe my boss will pay me, maybe they won't pay me. Maybe they'll give me what they promised, maybe they won't. Because we've all had experience of somebody saying, oh yes, yes, I will give you this, I will give you this, I will give you that. And they don't. Whether it's a job one works, whether it's in family life, whether it's among one's friends. But Krishna's not like that. He's dependable, so we have no cares. Krishna will take care of me. You could say, but Arimala, we know of devotees who don't get taken care of. We know of devotees who are poor. We know of devotees who get cancer. We know of devotees that their husband leaves them. They're with five little children to take care of and so many things. But there's also a trust that however Krishna takes care of me is perfect. When the mother takes the toy away from the child may think, I don't like my mother anymore. But the mother is taking the toy away out of care for the child. To help the child, maybe because it's dinner time, maybe because the child is hitting their brother over the head with the toy. So whether Krishna gives, whether Krishna takes away, I mean, even in the Bible it says, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, blessed be the holy name of the Lord. So we have no cares. Prabhupada says Krishna gives with 10 hands and then you can't even accept it all, and he takes away with 10 hands and then you can't hold on to it. Whether he's giving or whether he's taking, it's actually both caring. And it's both Krishna's way of giving us everything we need. Sometimes we don't know the best way to get what we need. Sometimes we're thinking the way I'm going to get what I need is right there, but maybe the way we're going to get what we need is over there. Sometimes we're so convinced if I do A, B, C, I'm going to get what I need. And we do A, B, C, and we don't get what we need. Doesn't that happen? Do we really know the best way to get what we need? Do we even know what we need? Half the time we don't even know what we need. Many times we don't know what we need and we don't know how to get there, but we're so convinced, I know everything and I'm the controller and I'm omniscient and I know what's best for me. And if something else is happening, that means Krishna doesn't love me anymore. Or he's not taking care of me. Or that cares, that's only for very advanced devotees. It's not for people like me. But no, as soon as we surrender to Krishna, then immediately we're under his personal protection. Yoga kshema vaham yaham. Near yoga kshema atmavan. Near yoga kshema atmavan. 245. Don't worry. Yoga is what you don't have, what you need to connect with. Kshema is protecting what you have. Don't worry about what you don't have. Don't worry about protecting what you have. Atmavan, be fixed in self. Why? Because yoga kshema vaham yaham. I'm going to take care of that. You know, even materially, if you have a good boss, you don't need to worry about your salary. If you work for a really good company, you don't have to think twice, am I going to get a salary? Am I going to get a desk? Am I going to get the equipment I need? You just concentrate on your work, and you know that your good boss is going to take care of it. I know when my husband ran a business, he always told me, make sure you pay people before they ask. Never make people ask for money. Let people have no anxiety, am I going to be taken care of? Of course, as a jiva, we may not be able, but we are not able to fully take care of others, but Krishna. So no cares. No cares. And with peace, I can fix my mind on Krishna and Krishna's business. All right, that's how our basic determination. Now, that's how the qualities of peace are exemplified in our determination. Now, how are the qualities of peace shown when we deal with other people? So I don't hate people even if they hate me. Now, at least I have people who hate me. Sometimes I haven't any clue why they hate me. Sometimes I do know why they hate me. Sometimes I can trace it to something I did or something I said. But sometimes I don't have any idea. There's this one lady who hates me, and I don't know why she hates me. I can't figure it out. Anytime I say anything, at least I don't have to deal with her in the same location very often. But, you know, there's one conference that we're both members of on email. And I'm terrified of ever contributing anything to it, because as soon as I contribute anything to it, she starts criticizing me. I'm like, what did I do? So there are people who hate us. And that's, you know, my dear friends, that's normal. It's not that we're ever going to get to a point where everybody likes us. Please don't waste your time trying to make everybody like you, because there are even jivas who hate Krishna. And he doesn't have any faults. You know, Jesus was crucified. There was a murder attempt against Bhaktisiddhanta. Prahlad's own father tried to kill him. You know, just what it is. Krishna has demons who look at him and say, oh, he's so beautiful, like Kaliyamana, let me kill him. So even if we're wonderful, and even if we're perfect, and even if we read all the self-help books, and we would follow every single thing they said all the time, and we were perfect and empathic listening and all those things, there'd still be people who hate us. For whatever reason. So one should wish them well. One should wish them well. This is actually the essence of forgiveness. May everyone be happy. If someone needs to learn a lesson, may they learn it through joy. And as Suruchi told Dhruva Maharaj, whatever you wish for people, that is what you will experience. So if I wish my enemies to suffer in order to become rectified, then I will suffer in order to become rectified. If we are tired of learning lessons through suffering, then we should wish only joy for others. And that's easy for the people who like us, but to wish only joy even for those who hate us, even for those who try to harm us in some way. Let this person be filled with joy. Let this person learn whatever they need to learn in a joyful way. Prabhupada said, this person's acting as my enemy for some cause. Sometimes I can see the cause in this life. I insulted them at one point, or I didn't treat them nicely, or something. But sometimes, like this one lady, I have no idea what I did in this life. I can't figure it out. I did something, some point, somebody, somewhere, that Krishna is allowing this person to act as my enemy. So the devotee sees, ultimately, I am responsible. So better to tolerate it, not always to go to Krishna, you know, please kill my enemies, please kill my enemies. Or like the demon in the 16th chapter, I've so far killed those enemies and those other ones, I'll get them too. And here you see that the tigers and the deer, who are natural enemies, they're dancing together in kirtan. So what's nice about the Hare Krishna movement is if we have enemies in the movement, we'll still dance with them in the kirtan, isn't it? I forget which devotee was. They made the point that we'll always try to help somebody remember Krishna at the time of death, even if they're our enemy. So even if there's some other devotee who absolutely hates you and has caused you nothing but grief and has told lies about you and gotten you in trouble with your authorities and put nasty things about you on the internet, if they were dying right in front of you, I bet you'd go chant Hare Krishna. Isn't it? I mean, would you walk past them and say, oh, I'm not going to help you go back to life? I don't think so. As one very nice story, when the devotees were preaching behind the Iron Curtain in the days of the Soviet Union, and they had to be there in disguise. There was a sannyasi there, and he had to let his hair grow a little bit, and they were wearing, you know, I never know what to call them. I don't like to call them non-devotional clothes, because my clothes have never been devotional as far as I know. You know, how are you? Western clothes, but that sounds like, you know, the Western cowboys or something, so I don't know. Modern European style clothing. So they're wearing modern Western European style clothing. And they weren't obviously devotees, in other words. And there was a traffic jam, and the devotees asked their driver, what's the problem? They went to investigate. They saw there had been an accident, and the accident had involved one of the big commanders in the Soviet army, someone who was the second in command in that region. And he was lying on the ground, basically dying. So the devotees came there, and one of them couldn't speak in Russian. So what's the matter? And they told him, and he said, well, we have a car, a phone. We can, you know, we have some sort of a way of communication. We can call an ambulance. So one of the devotees went to call an ambulance. And the attaché to the general told the general, these people are going to help you. You know, they're getting some medical help for you. And the general said, oh, thank you. You can hardly talk. He was dying. And he looked at the sannyasi who was in disguise, and he said, what is your name? Now, this wasn't, the sannyasi had a different name, but he said, my name is Krishna. So this general, he's dying, he said, oh, Krishna, Krishna, he died. So even though the devotees were so much harassed by the Soviet officials, I mean, harassed isn't even the word for it. So the Soviet officials, they were imprisoning the devotees, they were beating them, they were torturing them, they were starving them, they were confiscating their books. But even so, when it came to help them at the time of death, the devotees didn't hesitate. They didn't say, well, this is some demon, let me not help him. The devotees are always kind, even to their so-called enemies, and whatever happens, whatever harm their enemies do to them, they understand ultimately this is Krishna. So that's how one deals with one's enemies. Now, how does one deal with one's families? One doesn't think, this is my family. I like this picture. I know this is the family that I know very well. So one does not think, you know, this is my family. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, my friends, my wife, my sons and daughters are now your servants and maidservants. Whatever care I take of them is only as they are related to you. So one sees that these family members are not mine to enjoy. I'm not the boss of the family, and my husband is not my boss. Krishna is my boss. My family members in Krishna's company, They're either my suppliers of love of God, my co-workers in selling love of God, or my customers to whom I should sell love of God. And they're related to me in Krishna's company as Krishna's boss. They're not here for me to enjoy. They're here for Krishna to enjoy. Krishna's meeting all my needs. My wife is not going to meet all my needs. My husband's not going to meet my needs. My children are not going to meet all my needs. They are persons I'm working with and serving to please Krishna. Oh, this is a hard one. He by whom no one is put into difficulty. Wow. Whenever I read this one, I feel at least a little bit of humility and how far I am from being dear to Krishna. Because Krishna says about each of these qualities, the person who has these qualities, I never read it, but you know, read it at the end. Krishna has his qualities as dear to me. So no one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. So that's great. Isn't that difficult? Am I the only one who finds this difficult? Do you find this difficult? Now, especially if you're trying to get something done. You're trying to manage something, get something done, or if you're guiding somebody. It's very difficult to only tell people what's pleasant for them to hear. People come and, you know, what's your advice? And if you can't just always say, oh, everything's fine, you're wonderful, there's no problem, you can't. I mean, then you're not really serving them, and you can't always get a project done. Sometimes you have to say to people, hey, you know, I didn't see you for the last 3 days. What's going on here? How are we going to get this done? So how to do this? I see it's again a question of mood and consciousness that I'm a servant. To be very, very careful how we do things, how we say things. That to never step on people as a means to getting some project done. And to try to help people in as kind a way as possible. Now, to never justify our putting others into anxiety. I mean, sometimes people may be put into anxiety by what we do, but to avoid it as far as possible while still doing our job. Something to be very conscious of. And who is not disturbed by anyone. So why are we disturbed by others? Why do we find the behavior of others disturbing? Because we think that they're our boss. It's the only reason I find the behavior of others disturbing. I become afraid. I think that some other jiva has some sort of power over me. But that's not the fact. I'm an eternal soul. Nobody can hurt me. I can't be damaged by any weapon. I can't be hurt by any circumstances. Nothing, ever. And Krishna's taking care of me. If Krishna allows someone to so-called hurt me, then that's Krishna dealing with me as his kindness. Radhe Krishna, Rakhe Ke, Rakhe Krishna, Radhe Ke. If Krishna wants to save me, no one can hurt me. And if Krishna wants me to be apparently hurt, nobody can save me. If Krishna determines that I need surgery in order to deal with something, then you know what, I'm going to get it. And if Krishna determines that I don't need surgery, then I'm not going to get it. So other people's cutting me, you know, generally figuratively, not literally. If it happens, it's by the grace of the Lord and it's actually loving. And if people try and it's not what Krishna wants, they won't be able to do anything. And ultimately, I can't be hurt. And then one can have peace. Avoid joining factions. Prabhupada sometimes talks about this in relationship to himself, that the Gaudiya Math never joined any of the factions, and therefore he was careful. So there may be so many factions. Don't join this party or that party. All right, that's about dealing with other people. Now the qualities of peace in terms of detachment. Doesn't think he's the proprietor. Doesn't think, oh, this is my house. These are my clothes, these are my car, these are my talents, these are my abilities, this is my knowledge. Now, Krishna is the proprietor. He's giving me things to use in his service. I'm a servant. I'm not really doing anything. I'm just Krishna's instrument. And everything Krishna does is good. You see how this all relates to Bhaktiram Negatapa Samsara Loka Mahesham Surudam Sarvabhutanam? Do you see how all these different qualities relate to that? Surudam Sarvabhutanam. If Krishna's the friend, whatever he does is good. If Krishna feeds me, if he doesn't feed me. If sometimes Krishna gives me, you know, milk sweets from the manor, or sometimes he gave me, like he did a few months ago, some devotees gave my grandson and I some prasadam to take with us on our journey, and it was only something you would eat if you were really, really, really hungry. So sometimes you get that. You know, sometimes you get something that's just barely on the other side of food. And sometimes you eat like a king and a queen. Sometimes you may have no money. Sometimes you open up your wallet and you've got, you know, 3 cents. When Prabhupada left his householder life for about 4 or 5 years, he had no home and no money. He was counting not his rupees, he was counting his paisa to take a train to go see a donor about giving money to print his books, and he had no money for the return journey. So sometimes Krishna gives nothing, and then later Krishna gave Prabhupada millions. Right, look at this beautiful place George Harrison donated. So whatever, if Krishna gives me nothing, or Krishna gives me mansions, wherever I'm living, sometimes one may live very simple, you know, just a part of a room with one little shelf and a bathroom where the hot water doesn't work. So I'm staying in Soho, and periodically there's just no hot water. And the cold water, there's really cold. It's like Gangotri water. You know, he's waiting for it to freeze as it comes out of the shower. And other times you may stay in a very nice place, right, with a marble bathroom. So there's one place we stay with a marble bathroom, and the shower is up a flight of stairs, and there's a curtain. And I was told that some visiting sannyasis figured it was the altar and offered their dandavats. And there's gold, it's really, I'm not making this up, there's gold-plated shower handles, etc. So sometimes one stays in a place like that. But whatever comes, it's Krishna. Krishna doesn't feed me at all today, that's Krishna. And everything he does is good, therefore always satisfied. So the little mantra I came up with is, it's all going to be okay, and even if it's not okay, it'll still be okay. But I had a friend who taught me a better one. She said, in the end, everything will be okay, so if it's not okay, it's not the end. Uh-huh. And just to, you know, some little thing like that, that when the mind goes, what am I going to do? I have no money, I have no food, I have no place to stay. And Krishna will take care of me, it'll all be okay. And then above duality, unaffected by happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, auspicious, inauspicious, joy and grief, desire, lamentation, honor, dishonor, faith, infamy, heat, cold, bodily pain, bodily pleasure. What does it mean, unaffected by? Does it mean if you're cold, you don't put on a jacket? I mean, if you're at a very high level like Jet Bharat, it could mean that. But it means you're going to go on serving Krishna. You're going to go on worshipping Krishna. You're going to go on with the Amrita of Bhakti. You're going to go on thinking of Krishna. As Krishna explains in 14:22, one who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear. And Prabhupada says, lovely thing in that purport, that as long as we have the material body, as long as we have the material body and mind will be affected by the modes of nature. Sometimes my body's full of energy. Sometimes my body's exhausted. Sometimes my mind's full of energy. Sometimes my mind is exhausted. Sometimes my mind is happy. Sometimes my mind is sad. Sometimes it's hot. Sometimes I'm cold. Sometimes everything in my life seems auspicious. So I'm Sometimes everything seems inauspicious. But it's just the working of the modes of material nature. It's not me. They will come and go. And just observe. Oh, right now my mind's being affected by the mode of ignorance. That's interesting. Let me still worship Krishna. It will pass. Right now my mind's being affected by the mode of goodness. Oh, that's interesting. Let me just worship Krishna. It will pass. To remain neutral, it's not me. It's just the mind. It has nothing to do with me. And this can be achieved by practice, to be equipoised. If we get some dear thing, we don't, oh, now I've gotten this, we can say, thank you, Krishna, for giving me something that's dear to me. And if we get something disagreeable, thank you, Krishna, for helping me learn detachment. In either way, thank you, Krishna, for helping me. Whether by giving me something that I really wanted. Do you sometimes get something you really wanted? Sometimes there's things I want for years and I can't find them, and all of a sudden I get them. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Krishna. And sometimes you get things that are just awful. But either way, who's giving them is Krishna. Prabhupada says everyone can appreciate when you get something nice that it's Krishna. But to appreciate in both ways. If you build up some project in Krishna consciousness and then it gets destroyed, you don't lament. It's Krishna's. Just like when Mahaprabhu asked his mother, you know the story for a garland? You don't know the story? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked his mother, I want a garland to worship the Ganga. And she said, as mothers regularly say to their children, I'm busy right now. I'll get it for you in a moment. And Mahaprabhu said, no, I want it now. She said, I'll get it for you in a moment. I want it now! And he broke the whole house. And he actually broke the house. Broke the walls. He broke all the storage containers for the grains and the ghee. He destroyed the whole house. And then he was tired. He went to sleep. And when he got up, Satyamata said, my house belongs to you. If it gives you pleasure to destroy it, that's fine. But I don't know how I'm going to cook for you. I have a little problem. It's time for your meal. I have no stove. I have no ingredients. I have no pots. You've destroyed everything. How will I cook for you? And Lord Chaitanya said, I'll be right back. And he went out, he came back, and he gave her a whole bunch of gold. And he said, now you can buy everything again. And she was asking all the neighbors, do you know where Nima got this gold? So whatever we do for Krishna, that's for Krishna, it wasn't for me to enjoy. Krishna can build up our projects and he can destroy our projects. He can give us things, he can take those things away. And to have a higher taste, not to be attached to pious or sinful activities. Not to be thinking, well, I have to do pious activities so I can go to heaven and enjoy. Actually, just be attached to serving Krishna. So Krishna calls all these qualities Dharma Amritam in 1220, which Baladev says, the nectarian path endowed with good qualities. And Vishnu said, the nectar of these qualities. So when we are filled with these qualities of peace, our whole life is brilliant and sweet like nectar. And anyone who has these qualities, Krishna says over and over and over again, is very dear to him. So for each of these qualities, we'll read the verses in a moment. Krishna will say, this devotee is very dear to me. This devotee is very dear to me. So Vishwanath says, then why do these qualities make the devotee dear? Because they're coming from bhakti. Please understand the difference. Good qualities that are not coming from bhakti, they're only exhibited for selfish purposes. And therefore they're not deep, they're not real, and they can't be actually pleasing. Qualities that arise from bhakti mean they arise from trust and faith and courage in Krishna. They arise from a genuine lack of fear. They're not a device. Therefore, one who has these qualities from bhakti, Krishna is very pleased. And Krishna becomes controlled by that devotee. So even though Krishna is the boss, he becomes controlled by the love of his devotees. So now we'll read through these verses, and then if we have time, we can ask questions. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. Now, hopefully you'll hear the ones we went through them. Who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego. Who is equal in both happiness and distress. Who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination. His mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by others, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residents, who is fixed in knowledge and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. Day at 8:33. If you can turn on the lights, we have some time for any questions or comments. Yes,
ma'am. Do we have any update
on the status
of the case? We got the letter, we sent a collective.
Yes, yes.
So do we have an update?
Do we have
an update? Yeah.
Yes, we do have an update that we've raised almost all the money that we need. The difficulty we're having is finding a suitable place for what we've raised. So the places that he's found all need work. So if he can buy a place for that amount of money, then he's got to put like another $10,000 into fixing it up. So I should get another report today on how much we've collected. But I think we need to collect about another $5,000 or $6,000. And it was pretty astonishing. In 2 weeks, we collected $30,000. So I've never really seen anything like that before. It was a real outpouring of love for Swami Bhavana. So it looks like the devotee who was going to help purchase the house of Kalidosha Pranasana, he just has a new baby, so he's not going to be able to go for now a couple weeks. Things just took a little longer than we thought, and we're working on the legal things. We have to get him someplace by the end of May because he's going to be evicted from his current place by the end of May. So we need a solution in the next. We need something in the next like 3 weeks, and we're pushing it. We've got to get the legal agreements. We've got to get Kalidosha Pranasana there to buy the house, and we've got to collect the rest of the money. So, but it's coming. It's coming. Thank you for asking. Yes.
One of those qualities that was going under the determined and undistracted was service for Krishna with determination. So what is this determination? Also in Bhagavad Gita there is mentioned this in one verse, this dritta vrta. So can you explain what this is?
Dritta vrta means a great vow. Sometimes dritta vrta literally means celibacy.
What's here?
But Prabhupada talks about dritta vrta in terms of following kadasi and things of that nature. I see service to Krishna with determination that whatever happens. Because there's a lot here about being equal poised. That you don't give up your service. And just like I had one godbrother whose parents died in a plane crash and left him millions of dollars, and he immediately left Krishna consciousness. So not that I give up my service when I have something nice. Oh, now I have everything I wanted materially, so I don't have to serve anymore. And not to give up your service when there's something that's not nice. You know, or some devotee that didn't treat me nicely, or how could Krishna do this to me? I'm going to give up my service. That's how I understand it. And that one is fixed, that my goal of life is to serve Krishna. And even if I fail over and over and over again, I think of it like the determination of the child who's learning how to walk. Or if you go to a foreign country and you're trying to learn the language, in order to learn a foreign language, you have to be willing to risk making a fool of yourself by saying something that's wrong. Otherwise, you'll never learn. You can't wait until you know how to speak perfectly before you open your mouth. You have to open your mouth and try. But if you're determined, then you overcome that. You overcome that embarrassment and that hesitation. And it's hard, but you still do it. So the little child learning how to talk, the little child learning how to walk. If you see children learning how to walk, they spend most of the time falling down. And they get bruises. Little children learning how to walk, they usually have bruises. But they don't give up. They don't say, oh, this walking is too hard. So we all did that. Now we can do that for Krishna also. Yes?
Yes, well, yeah, believe me, I'm not patronizing you. But the last two days have been wonderful. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I have one difficulty, actually.
Okay. Only one, that's not enough.
Yes. It is that I think one of your gurus, name, if I'm not mistaken, over there on the song. We may lecture late to you. He said that, addressing Radharani, you were saying that
Prabodhananda Saraswati.
Yeah, yes. Yogic practice to achieve the final goal, it is horrendous. And it's becoming boring for me.
Mm-hmm.
So Mata, addressing Radharani again, saying, can you just tell me how you are already in my heart and how I should worship you? If you can tell me that, then my problem is solved. So I belong to that category, actually. And to be honest, I find this quite horrendous, really. And
what horrendous?
This yogic processes.
Well, we're not supposed to, that's fine.
Yes, but the thing is there an alternative? For example, it is certainly not fortuitous. It is certainly not serendipity. It is actually a sort of a late path which is full of difficulties.
What is?
Achieving the goal through the yogic process.
But we're not trying to achieve the goal through yogic process.
Then how do you achieve peace at the end anyway? Would it not be much better? For example, if you have the divine in your heart, as you know very well, I mean, this is not a difficult thing to see, because everywhere is going in here to see Hanuman exposing his heart, showing Sri Ram and Sita. Okay, we may not be able to do that, but I mean, if they're in there, then that is the problem is solved, isn't it?
Correct.
So, why not take that part?
Yes.
So, in that case,
I agree. You picked up the whole essence of my talk.
Right. Okay. Thank you very
Perfect.
Much. Thank you.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you.
In particular, if I may say so, again, I'm not patronizing your style of delivery and the yogic style. It is really wonderful. I wish I had.
I'm sure you have better, yeah, in your own way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So if I gave you the impression that we're promoting the indirect path, so that then my pedagogic style was greatly defective. We are not promoting the indirect path. We are explaining the indirect path because Krishna explains it. And we're explaining the indirect path to say that path is real. It is real. And it can work. And you can at last achieve Krishna through that path. But it's not recommended. And it's very troublesome. And it's actually horrendous. And Prabhupada says in the 12th chapter, he says in one place, that path should not be recommended at any time. Then later on he says, well, somebody can do it if they haven't yet met a pure devotee. So if you don't know about the direct path of bhakti, you can take the other path. But otherwise, why take that path? Why walk the 10 kilometers staircase without shade, without toilets and water and benches in the hot sun up to Tirumala? Why not take the 3 kilometer path that is shaded and has benches and water and toilets, and we hear the chanting from Tirumala the whole way. Or why not just take a car?
Interestingly, even Western, some of the Western philosophers like Arthur Schopenhauer and poet, the German poet, Wolfgang and von Goethe, they also suggested the same thing.
Just take the direct path of bhakti. Very good. Somebody else? Pardon?
These qualities of devotee, no one is put into distress, but even pure devotees, even if they are innocent, and still some people take offense.
Isn't that something? So how do we understand that? How do you understand that? Because I often struggle with this. You know, he for whom no one is put into difficulty.
I think it's, if you do it by purpose,
that's how I've understood it, that it's the mood and the intention of the devotee to never put anybody into difficulty and never cause anyone distress. But what do you do? I mean, if you're a surgeon, how do you do surgery without putting your patient into distress? How do you do that? You don't want the patient to just come and you say, I don't want to put you in any distress, so I think you can't. Yes, do you have something to say on this?
What we're discussing is it's more about the intention. That's my understanding. It's the Srila Prabhupada and any aspiring devotee, his only intention is to deliver and uplift.
Yes.
And in the process, then the other thing is the natural. He's obviously not intent on bringing distress to anyone. What he is intent on doing is benefiting the person, bringing them into Krishna consciousness. And how others are going to feel about that, how some atheistic, demoniac person is going to feel, has really nothing to do with the intention of.
That's true. Of course, we could use that as an excuse. But I think we have to be very careful about this. Because it's very easy to say, well, I'm smashing you over the head for your good. And I would say that, you know, we really have to look at the austerities of speech. So if what I'm doing is causing someone distress by what I say, my dealings with them, I have to see whether or not they're actually receptive. So I'm sure you've also had this experience. I've had people who come to me for help, but when even the most gentle help that I give them, they find distressing. And I simply can't help them without giving them some distress, and they don't listen to me anyway. Then after a while, I say, I'm sorry, I can't help you anymore.
You mentioned one thing about how there's someone you, and whenever you make some comment somewhere, they immediately come in and criticize and so on and so forth. And I agree with you. You feel, or we all like to feel, that whatever comes out of our mouth is gentle and it's coming out with good intention and the best of intention, but actually it might not be.
That's right.
And I agree with you that if my intention is to actually directly or indirectly smash anyone over the head with what I'm saying, that's not following this.
That's right. It's something where it's hard to be deeply honest because we tend to assume that we have good intentions. We tend to assume I have good intentions, and if someone else is put into anxiety by what I'm doing, it's their problem. I mean, that's the strong tendency. So how to both do what you have to do, which sometimes other people will feel anxiety by it, and at the same time never go into that space of, well, I don't really care if this makes you suffer or not. I know sometimes with some people I have to just say, I can't help you. I'm just not the person to help you. I'm not capable of helping you. Because no matter how I try to help you, you feel anxiety. So better you get help from somebody else. Sometimes I have to do that. But I've seen that this uncaring, well, I have a job to do. Maybe it doesn't even have to do with you. You know, I have a job to do, and I know you're suffering, but I can't do anything bad, no well, too bad. So it doesn't really have to do with you. I'm trying to get something done over there, and you're kind of in the way, and I just sort of push you out of the way to get done what I've done. Or I'm trying to help you, and to help you, I know I'm smashing you over the head, and I know that I'm breaking you into little bits, but oh well, too bad. That kind of mentality is full of false ego and pride. So, But it's hard to spot it. It's really hard to spot it. It's hard to spot in myself, and I see that people in general find it very difficult to see that clearly. I've dealt with so many people who say, you know, well, I'm doing this for a good cause, and therefore it's okay. And you'll say, but Prabhu, you're damaging everybody in your so-called good cause. So it seems to be a difficult thing to see accurately.
I think the process of Krishna consciousness is about being aware of those blind spots that
yes.
we have constantly. And if we're constantly aware, how can I improve that blind spot?
Yes.
It's about inflection, really.
Yes.
It's about inflection. It's not
very
am
much
I getting
so.
It right, am I doing the right thing, am I getting it right, am I getting better? It's about inflection of blind spots in my path.
Definitely. And that goes back to the point that we shouldn't just think, okay, everything's automatically going to come by bhakti. As part of my bhakti, I should introspect. As part of my bhakti, I should be an introspective sage and say, you know, am I doing things in such a way that Krishna's going to say I'm dear to him? Is Krishna going to say, well done, good and faithful servant, by the way I'm treating my co-workers and customers and my suppliers? Yes, what's this last one? Yes, please.
If we define our qualities by our level of protection, in other words, to put others in front of ourselves, would you say that Vaishya mentality is about my stomach first, and a Kshatriya will be saying, I'll sacrifice everything, my own life, to you are protected?
There's one thing that Kshatriya will not sacrifice. Does anyone know what Kshatriya won't sacrifice? Their honor. So Kshatriya will sacrifice their life, their wealth, everything, but they'll not sacrifice their honor. So Kshatriya also has some. And the Brahmana and non-Vaishnava, they won't sacrifice their liberation. Something. But the idea, guys, but you can only put other people ahead of yourself if you're satisfied from Krishna. You can't artificially put other people ahead of yourself consistently if you're not getting full from Krishna. You just can't. You do it for a while. You can for a while put other people ahead of you, but there's always a part of you that will be calculating, when am I going to get back? And eventually you'll rebel and say, what about me? It won't stay. So the only way to really put other people ahead of ourselves is if I'm already full. If I don't need anything from anybody else. Because I've already got all my needs from my boss. That's the only time you can do it. As soon as you're thinking, the way this person is dealing with, I'm dependent on the way this person is dealing with me, in order to be happy, in order to be safe, in order to have meaning in my life, in order to have love, in order to have whatever. Then when I'm not getting something from them, I'll eventually become disturbed. But if I'm getting everything from Krishna, then I can just give. Does that make sense? It has to start from the connection with Krishna. And whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, if you're a Vaishnava, you're giving. The Vaishya is generating wealth to share that wealth with the society and share that wealth for yajna and give in charity. The Shudra is developing their arts and their skills to share those arts and skills for the upliftment of society. The Kshatriya is becoming expert in protection so they can protect the society for yajna. The Brahmin is becoming expert in truth and philosophy so they can enlighten everyone. Okay, thank you very much for inviting me for these 3 days. I hope you all enjoyed this diving deep into Bhagavad Gita chapter 12. All glories to Shiva.